Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, it's me, Richard Herring. I'd like to welcome you to Rahalastapa, my podcast with this week's guest is Dave Johns, the comedian and actor. You may have seen him in I, Daniel Blake. He is Daniel Blake. So he's the only person who can say that. I'm not a Daniel Blake. He is. He's in Fisherman's Friends. He's all over the place now. And he's a fantastic stand-up, as you're going to find out from this podcast, with a lot of crazy stories. You can also build walls, so if you're looking for one. Look, thanks very much for watching and listening to these podcasts. Do keep that up if you can, and spread the word to other people. The more people we have listening, especially the better. And if you feel like donating some money, I've just been drinking a fizzy cola and burping a little bit. Why not become a badger? GoFasterStripe.com/badges. You will get backstage interviews with every guest, at least 5 minutes of extra stuff, usually the emergency question stuff. I know you love that. You will get my stand-up shows, be able to watch those there. You will get lots of other sort of extra videos and all that sort of stuff, like the stone clearing documentary, the snooker tournament, and other things that will generally usually only go to Kickstarter people. Extras from DVDs we're going to add in there. And you'll get a membership card, you get a membership badge, you get a secret code to share with other Rahalastapa badges. You'll be helping us make more content. We are trying to make an audio sitcom in 2020. We're trying to branch out and do more stuff. If you cannot become a badger, there's a prize draw as well. There's all sorts of stuff. If you can't become a badger, then just spread the word. If you can come and see it live, that's a big help as well. richardherring.com/gigs. We are trying to get you some fantastic guests in 2020. Or just watch and listen from home. It all counts. Support us if you like it. Tell your friends if you like it. If you don't like it, tell your friends as well, because they're probably dicks as well. So only cool people like this show. It's just well known. Look, 2 minutes and 8 seconds have passed. Let's sit back, relax, enjoy Rahalastapa with David Johns from the Newcastle Stand. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Stand in Newcastle. Please welcome a man who you haven't just seen. This is the first time you've seen him, remember.
who has just owned Piers Morgan, according to the Poke website, is Richard Herring. Thank you. Hello, Newcastle. Oh, yeah. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Richard Herring's Limbo Shall Transpire podcast. Just trying to come up with something. There's so many podcasts now, you have to come up with a new idea. And what we're going to do is celebrities who have just died but who've not lived a particularly bad or good life have to go into heavenly limbo, and I'll probably also do some limbo dancing while they're there, and then we'll work out which way they're going to go. Well, it'll take several millennia of waiting. That I was hanging around in Biker Grove. I mean, it had to be, didn't it? The other day. And Spuggy was there. Spuggy was there. She's a middle-aged woman with four children. One of them, who ironically was blinded by a paintball gun. You'd think she'd, of all the people you'd think she would have, all people you'd think she would have learned. Some of the younger Newcastle people going, I don't know what's going on. Surely Spuggy is still worshipped. Anyway, Spuggy and three of her kids call it Rehullestubus. So I don't know if that's going to... apparently I owned Piers Morgan. Piers Morgan on Twitter this week, the week of recording, was a man called Jim Bendel had taken issue with Piers Morgan because he, with his treatment of Extinction Rebellion spokesperson. And Piers Morgan tweeted him back and said, "Oh, Jim, I understand. I understand your pain. I'd feel bitter if my surname was an anagram of Bellend." So I tweeted him back and said, "Rather than being an anagram of spermy organ." So that is apparently I'd. That's spermy with an I, but I think it's still. His name is an anagram of a lot of things, weirdly, which makes things he's not a real person. Grim Persona is one of his anagrams as well. There's several rude ones. Some people argue it should be I Sperm Organ. I thought that was a bit too classical. I think Spermy Organ is funny. Anyway, we're here in Newcastle. It's lovely. I'll talk about that next week. And ironically, it sort of is a different audience next week. I'm confused. Topical when this was recorded. Pizza Express in danger of closing down. A lot of people making the same joke about calzone, not good. But I didn't do that. But I'm upset because Pizza Express is my favourite restaurant. I always used to go on dates there. And I had a cast iron. I mean, I'm married now, so I don't go on dates there if my wife's listening. And I had a cast iron guaranteed 100% successful seduction technique, which you can still use if Pizza Express is open. You have to order the Veneziana pizza, and then when the bill comes, say, "I don't want to pay the 25p discretionary contribution to the Venice in Peril Fund, as I hate Venice, and I want it to sink into the sea." 100% times I did that, got a shag. So it's girls love it if you hate Venice. That's what I'm saying. So, 100%. I did it twice. 100%. 100%. That's how I seduced Julia Sawala, ladies and gentlemen. That worked. That was the line that worked. And what I want to know, is Venice clubbing together to save Pizza Express? No, it isn't, the fuckers. It's all take, take, take. They're living in a place that's sinking. They don't deserve any money. Give the money. Give some money back to Pizza Express, you cunts. Anyway, it's lovely to be here in Newcastle. I'll talk about Newcastle next week. I just want to say, I will never do this podcast in Sunderland. That is a guarantee. Fuck Sunderland. Fuck them. And anyone who's travelled down from Sunderland for this gig. So is my guest this week. He's probably best known for playing cheesy Alan Supple in Time, Gentlemen, Please, the fantastic pub landlord sitcom that you all know very well. Will you please welcome the amazing Davy Jones, ladies and gentlemen? Davy Jones. Hello. Yeah, I had. Sit down. Davy Jones.
Cheesy Alan Supple. One of my top roles.
It was.
This is something you don't see very often nowadays, actually. A Geordie working underground. But there you go. Not bitter.
Cheesy Alan Supper. Cheeky Alan Supper was played by Frank Skinner, and yeah. you were a tribute actor. Yeah.
What happened to what's happened to Frank Skinner?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He took the wrong role.
So it's lovely to see you, Davey. Yeah. We've known each other for quite some time.
Yeah.
And we met.
A lot of years.
Yeah, we met in.
You were a small child when I first
met. I was.
You were... thought that was a bit weird, but now it's balanced out now, hasn't it?
And you were a middle aged man when I met you. And
I was a middle aged man. Now I was knocking about with a 4-year old kid. But now it doesn't seem as weird now. I mean, it does when we still go on the park and I push you on the swing. But apart from that, it's cool.
We met in, I think probably the first time we might have met on the circuit, but in Adelaide in 1997. We went out with a load of comedians to sort of an unofficial Adelaide festival. It was weird, wasn't it? It wasn't the official Adelaide festival. It was run by some...
It was behind some bike shed. It was. Are you looking for the festival?
So there was a comedy festival, and it was quite a lot of... I think it was the first time any of us had really been abroad with our comedy.
Yeah, you could tell we went mental, didn't
we? Yeah, it was. There was put up in this big motel, and there was a jacuzzi and
the Arca Bar Hotel. And it was in you and Stu were young faced young lads.
We were,
and I was just seeing you. I just remember I've got this photograph of him and Stuart, and they're in this jacuzzi, and it's brilliant. And I just took it, and then I thought this is brilliant, and. There's them two sitting in the jacuzzi like this. And then there's two comics on the other side. And there's a guy called Michael Smiley, who's an actor now. He's done a lot of quite films. And a Scottish guy called Parrott, who is this crazy Scottish guy. And Smiley's sitting with his bald head and Parrott's balancing his cock and his balls. and these two are sitting like this. And I can see my face going, we've got a month of this.
It was day one, wasn't it?
Day one, it was a brilliant. Yeah, because I think we landed and they all took a load of magic mushrooms, I think, when they landed. And it was about, it was about 40 degrees. It was crazy.
It was nuts. A lot of people going. I mean, Australia is a weird place for comedians to go anyway. And a lot of people go nuts and end up getting divorced and marrying someone else and then divorcing them. It happens a lot.
Yeah.
So I managed to never get married when I went out there, but it was fantastic. So you're...
We also went on the trip.
Yeah, we went on an amazing trip.
We got invited. They said, would you like to go to Kangaroo Island? And we thought, yeah, that'd be pretty cool, Kangaroo Island. And so we're going to meet. So we met on that jetty, and you had all come in, and I was late. And you're going, where have you been? And I went, I had to get something. And I'd hired a clown. A female clown, Fred, didn't I?
Fred, yeah.
And you goes, what? And I goes, yeah, I hired a clown. I goes, I always go on safaris with a clown. and I've got photographs again on Kangaroo Island of her behind a rock. And she's like behind a rock, and she's behind a gum tree, and she's like this. And I tell people that there was a circus, a plane crashed, and they went feral, and all. And you and Stuart were going, this is the second day, and they got clowns.
She stayed in character pretty much the whole time, I think. So you know, I mean,
I paid her about. $100. Yeah. I said, how much did you get the clown for a day? And I said, I'll give you double. And she went, okay. So we hired her for a day. And she says, what? And I didn't tell her. And I said, we're going to Kangaroo Island. And I said, it was for kids. And there was all these comics. And she ended up marrying a comic, didn't she?
Yeah. And she still dresses as a clown, even to this day. We don't know what she looks like underneath the makeup. Yeah. It was
great standing on her feet and pushing her backwards.
It must have been weird for her turning up and you think it's going to be a kids' party and then there's loads of men there going, oh, fuck, on an island. They've taken me to an island.
That's why I had to pay double.
So, Davey, you've had an amazing story through your career. As I was saying to you, I was saying to you backstage, you've become enormously successful as an actor in recent years. It's taken a long time until we got to that point. But I think any other comedian, if it happened to on the circuit, there'd have been some mumbles of, oh, that fucking cunt. Has he got this?
But there might be some of them.
There might be someone do that. But it was sort of amazing to be part of that community. Everyone was so...
it was a bit crazy, yeah.
Yeah, everyone was so pleased.
I won Best Newcomer. I won Empire best newcomer at the age of 62. And this is no. And when I got the when I got home with the award, I was really chuffed. The NHS had sent me through the post an over 60s bowel cancer testing kit. Every time you try to leave, they pull you back in. I mean, that took the shine off it, you know. There's your award. Now shit in that tube and send it off in the post. What did you do after your award? Did you drink champagne? No, I shat in a little tube and posted it.
But you've been a stand-up for a long, you know, decades before this happened. Yes. And before that, you were a bricklayer. You worked behind the scenes in theatres, right?
Yeah, 30 years I've been a stand-up. Yeah. And it was weird, because every time I went on stage, I realised nobody knew who the fuck I was, you know? I mean, if I'd been a spy, that would have been a brilliant career. Wouldn't it? You see, if you're a spy and nobody knows you, go, he's very successful. If you're a comic and nobody knows you, it's like, oh, no. Yeah, but yeah, and then Daniel Blake came on and Ken Loach, and it all went crazy, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you had done acting before that, though, as well, so you've always been quite experimental, as well as there's a lot of guys like you, I think, aren't there, that have been doing stand-up for since they were young and carry on doing stand-up. And in a way, you give false hope to all of us other middle-aged men, think, oh, we'll probably get discovered by Ken Loach in a minute and get to hang out with Meryl Streep.
When Ken Loach does his next film about a middle-class successful comic. Have you seen Ken's new movie about the middle class, lad? Apparently, he couldn't get any quince on a Tuesday.
I actually had a quince tree in the garden of my house.
I know.
I didn't know what it was.
Of course you did.
I didn't know what it was. We bought a house and had a quince tree.
Of course
you did. So, it fell down. It was terrible. It fell down.
Ken
we had Loach to take it
in one of his most moving films ever.
The fallen quince
Remember,
tree.
Remember the great Bollinger shortage of 87. When you were down to your last Nebuchadnezzar. What? Not even a drop of kava for the children? No, no.
But
you're the nicest middle class bloke I've ever met.
You're allowed to take the piss out of me. It's absolutely fine. You're a big actor. I could be the evil role in a Ken Loach film.
Yeah.
But you were literally about to give up stand-up when you were you feeling like you were that I've heard you quoted as saying you were sort of on the point thinking, why am I travelling around the country?
What happened was I was traveling, I'd been a stand-up, I'd love stand-up. I started a club in Newcastle in the early 80s and in youth lads played the theatre at that time, didn't you? In a fist of fun. And I love stand-up, but you get, like, as you get older, travelling on trains and, you know, and bus replacement services, you know, and all that, you know. And my daughter is 13, and when she was about sort of 11, I was down in Scarborough with her. We go away on road trips, and I was talking to the bloke who rang the donkeys.
Yeah.
And he goes, and he says, I run these donkeys, and I only work in the summer, then I live in the south of France. And I thought... The donkeys in the summer up here is only 2 days, so that's he charges £2 in posh people. You don't have to stable the donkeys because posh people have got horses. They look after the donkeys in the winter because they make very good companions. Okay. So I looked into it, and basically I was going to run donkeys, and I thought, because Whitley Bay in time I haven't had a donkey since the 60s.
Yeah.
But then it was public liability insurance you have to get now. In the 60s, if you were a kid and you fell off a donkey, you're an idiot. Now, apparently, it's a donkey's fault and everybody gets sued. And no, I was seriously looking into running donkeys. I thought, that would be quite good, just walking the donkeys up and down. In the summer, I thought, you know, I've done stand-up, but this isn't going to... You know, I'm going to do gigs, but it's not going to go massive. And then Ken Loach ruined me bloody career.
Your whole donkey idea.
Yeah.
A lot of donkeys had to be sent to the knacker's yard as well, Ken Loach. When that film comes out, Ken Loach the donkey killer.
Kes the donkey. Go, Kes, go. How do you train a donkey?
You should have looked into that before you started thinking, taking that up, Davey.
I know.
So what was the process? How did this role end up coming to you?
Oh, a mate of mine. You know, up in Edinburgh, we did 12 Angry Men. The comics did 12 Angry Men. And the producer, I mean, this is crazy. The producer sent me a... Basically said a text. He says, Ken Loach is looking for a bloke your age to be in his new film. get in touch with the casting people. And, like, you know what comics are like. We just go, yeah, yeah, we'll do it, yeah, yeah. And then my missus said, have you... And I went, there's knee. I went, all right. So I sent the text off. And when I, Daniel Blake, won the BAFTA, she said to me, we're in the... at the BAFTA, she said, I've still got the text you sent, Ken. And she said, do you want to see it? And I'd never seen it for ages. And it went... And it was, I went, hi, I'm Dave Johns. I'm a 59-year-old stand-up comic. Yeah, Ken Loach is looking for a bloke to be in his new film. I'd be up for that. And she says, Ken pissed himself laughing. And so I got to meet him for... And I just thought, I'm going to meet Ken Loach.
Yeah, yeah.
10 minutes. I thought, this is going to be a right old laugh meeting Ken Loach. And I talked to him for 10 minutes. He just talked about my dad because I come from the same place that the film was made, Biter. Yeah. And he says to me, he goes, you got any questions? I went, yeah, I want to ask you a question about Kess. And he goes, what do you want to ask her? I goes, you know the bit where Judd's killed the Kestrel and he's drunk and he's lying on a couch and Billy Casper's over him going, you bastard. And he went, yeah. I goes, well, just over his shoulder on a table in shot, there was a can of carnation milk. I couldn't keep my eyes off it. It ruined the whole fucking film for us. And he just pissed himself laughing. I did five castings with different actresses.
Yeah.
Never thought I'd ever get the part. Kept going because he didn't tell us what it was. He just... Because when you shoot a film with Ken, he shoots chronologically.
Yeah.
And he doesn't give you the script. He gives you a couple of pages of script. So he just... I was just doing scenes like, oh, you two are workmates. She's come in, she's got a black eye. You think her boyfriend's beating her up, talk to her. And he was just, you know, it was all those sort of things, you know? Yeah. And then I kept going and I kept getting asked back in. And all my acting mates were going, just keep on doing what you're doing, do what you're doing. And then he phoned me up and said, we want to offer you the part. And I went, and he went, it's a film called I, Daniel Blake. You're playing Daniel Blake. And I thought, shit. And I did say to him, oh, I thought it was Spider-Man. Geordie Spider-Man. And he just said, you're navigating, you're an out-of-work carpenter, and you're navigating the benefit systems. And I thought, oh, no. You know? And it won the fucking Palme d'Or. And we filmed it for 5 weeks in Newcastle in Biker. Chronologically, you get a couple of pages of script each day. You don't, because he doesn't want you to preempt the scenes you're going to do. And he just, I finished, I thought, wow, I've been working with Ken Loach, brilliant. I mean, one day we were standing and filming in the bathroom, I'm supposed to fix a toilet, and it was really cramped. He's only got the camera guy in, Robbie Ryan, so Ken stands in the shower unit. And I was just standing beside him, and I just pressed this imaginary button, and I went, Professor, to the 60s in the time machine. And he went, back to the 60s. He goes, I know, I shouldn't have left the 60s, shouldn't I? And we filmed it, and it went absolutely batshit crazy. Right time, right place. Hit a nerve, you know?
Yeah.
And his new film's coming out on the 1st called Sorry We Missed You, and again that's about 0 hours contracts. I think that's going to cause another stink, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but it's obviously led to like an amazing opportunities for you, and amazing, like, just the weird you being in BAFTA and all the red carpets and meeting all the big films.
Do you know what the weirdest one? I'm standing in the Cannes Film Festival. It's not a word of a lie, and this is the weirdest thing, right? And I'm just trying to be, you know, I'm standing with the girl who played Katie. And Donald Sutherland comes walking towards us. And I'm like, it's like, answer, that's Donald Sutherland? And he comes to me, and he's about a couple of feet away from us, and he goes, Dave. And I went, Donald. And it was like, this is absolutely insane, man. It's insane, man. Yeah. Now, bloody, I saw, bloody, what do you call him, bloody, I'm in the hotel, you know, the big posh hotel, and that's where they got, I walked across the hotel thingy, and the guy goes, come here, Dave, the publisher goes, I want you to meet somebody, he goes, Stephen, this is Dave, he's in Ken's play, and I goes, Steven Spielberg, and he goes, yeah, and I goes, hello, and he goes, congratulations on your film. Everybody in Cannes is raving about it. I haven't seen it yet, but I hear your performance is remarkable. Congratulations. So I went, so how's the BFG going? and he goes, yeah, we're really pleased with the response. And I said, because you know Ken Loach, he couldn't make a film like the BFG. And he went, well, I guess not. Ken's more political. And I went, no, he'd want a real giant in it. And I'm going, shut the fuck up. And I goes, you can't get them. I goes, you probably tried for ages not to get Mark Rylance. And Spielberg's looking at me like, you know that thing, remember when people don't know whether you're a nutcase or whether you're taking a piss? And he's going, yeah. So you go, why has Dave never been in the Steven Spielberg movie? Because he thinks I'm an idiot. but now, and then people just keep offering me film parts. It's crazy. I've just done a film with a mate of yours who's been, Alison Steadman,
yeah, he's done in my...
23 Walks, which is about two pensioners, 60s, who meet on 23 dog walks, and it's about their relationship. It's a love story for pensioners. It's got dogs and pensioners getting on. Who wouldn't want to see that? And I had my first love scene. Whoa! Wow. 63 years of age. Yeah.
You and Alison?
Oh, me and Alison. And like, she's done loads. And she was telling me, she goes, I did one once in this sort of late 60s with Tom Jones. And he says, and she says, we're sitting on the bed, and he was saying to her, you know, Alison, I'm a singer, you know, I'm a singer, you know, and I really don't, I've never done anything this before, you know. He's from Mumbai, by the way. He says, I've never done any of this, you know, but you know, if you can help me. So he just went for it, and she says, and she was like, giving this, you know, and they did about three takes, and he sat on the bed, and he went, I don't know about you, Alison, but I'm feeling bloody horny now. So the goes to me, so I'm a bit nervous. So and she goes, and I goes, we're gonna be, she says, you're gonna be naked, it's gonna be tastefully done, you know, it's gonna be tastefully done, but it's going in the curtain, it's gonna be under the curtain, it's gonna be under the duvet.
Yeah.
But so I says, this is when you wear this thing called a modesty pouch.
Yeah.
You know? So I goes, so they give me this thing, and Alison's got something on, and we're both come out, we've both got our bathrobes on. We're on set, it's a closed set. There's the focus puller, the camera, and there's a couple of the crew sound, but it's very, and all the monitors on the set are turned off and everything like that. And so, we're waiting. And I got on, she's got a great sense of humor.
Yeah, she's great.
So I'm going, and I look at it, and I can't, this is really uncomfortable. And it goes, well, it's industry standard. And I'm like, well, I'm a jury, you know. And the costume goes, give us a look. So I thought, oh, I just did. So I opened my thing, right? And she goes, you've got on back to front. With you. And both me balls were hanging out of each side. It was like Dumbo's face. I see an elephant fly. Honestly, I went, it's Dumbo's face. And when I said that, they had to stand the crew down for 25 minutes. Because no, the focus puller's going, I can't really pull focus. And it was, yeah, and I had it on the wrong way. So. So these are the sort of things, even though I get on set, I'm a liability.
You are a liability. They shouldn't let comics. Alison plays my mum in my Radio 4 sitcom, so you've fucked my mum now, and that makes it very difficult for me to do the rest.
But it was so weird having to do that.
Like, yeah.
You know, we did this shot, and then I was lying on top of where they were changing something in the bus. I think they call it swinging in lanes.
Yeah.
And I know all the terminology now, and I'm lying on top of her, and I started laughing. She went, what are you laughing at? I goes, I'm shagging Alison Stead.
Abigail's party. Who can forget that? My goodness.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I've come up with a numerical question as a basis of reading a few of the facts on your website, which is very useful, actually. I wish everyone did what you did. On your website, there's just a whole
full
page.
Facts.
There's a whole page of facts, which makes my job very easy.
Yeah.
So I'll ask facts. You this
my
question.
My website, that you'll all go on tomorrow and see where I'm touring.
Yeah. You must do. I'll ask you this question. I know you have an answer. Who is the most famous person you've been in a lift with? I'm going to ask other people this question now, David, because do you remember what the...
Woody Allen.
It is Woody Allen.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was really embarrassing. But what it was I was standing, basically. This is the whole story, right? And I don't know whether this was... But this happened. I was in the toilets at the hotel in Cannes, in the main hotels, big in the road. And I was in the hotel, and I was a bit pissed, and Woody Allen came into the toilet.
Yeah.
And I went, and I thought, I remembered about Steven Spielberg, and I thought, don't fucking talk to him, right? So I just went into the cubicle, and I don't know whether it was him, but somebody went to the cubicle next door, and I heard them going. So when I got in the lift, I didn't say anything, and I was going up in the lift, and he was going up in the lift, and I was just there, and when I went bing, and I walked out of the lift, and just as the lift doors shut, he went, "I heard you laughing." And I always dreamt, Woody Allen is a massive hero of mine, he really is. And I always thought I'd be sitting with maybe a glass of brandy one night, talking about comedy. You know, Woody, I found some of your material. Well, yeah, Dad, you know, it's not going, I'd listen to him having a shit.
Oh, dear. I mean, here's some other facts from your website. You met the guy who plays Homer Simpson in Edinburgh.
Oh, that was so embarrassing as well. Why are my stories embarrassing?
I wanted you to be embarrassed.
Do you remember when they went up to do... The whole cast went to Edinburgh to read... And the whole cast were there, and they read some scenes from The Simpsons. It was old comics and everything. In the previous... They had this big chat, and it was Dan
Castellaneta.
All the cast, and Matt Groening, who was there. And I said, as a question, I put my hand up, and he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "I'd like to ask Matt Groening a question." And he went, "Yeah." I goes, "How many pens have you got?" And he went, "What?" I said, "How many pens have you got?" I goes, "Just a ballpark figure." And he went, "No." He went, "On me now." I went, "Yeah, or in the house, or I mean, how many pens have you got?" And then afterwards, we were in the bar, and I had a couple of glasses of wine, and Dan, and you don't do this, and Dan what's he called, Dan
Castellaneta.
He was there, and I went up to him and I said, "I'm a massive big fan of The Simpsons, like everybody here is. I'm a comic, I'm doing a show here, and I guys, I know this is really naff, I guys, but would you do Homer for us?" And he went, "Yeah. But you gotta close your eyes." And as I closed my eyes, I went, "Oh, fuck." And I opened them, and he fucked off out the door. And as I closed my eyes, I went, no. That was brilliant.
That is so good.
But that's what he had to do.
Yeah.
yeah.
Very
yeah,
good.
That's true.
Yeah, and there's a lot. There's a lot. There's some things on the facts that I don't think are true.
They are true.
Well, there's one that's definitely not true. That one of them is that you have a false leg but a real foot. That isn't true. You shared a bag of chips with Cindy Crawford.
Yes, I did. I was. We did one for the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
In London, remember
I saw it. Fantastic.
And Christian Slater was in it, and he had loads of sort of like famous people were coming in. There was like Dennis Hopper would come in one night, and like I'd be sort of like. I played, so I'm like this, and I was like watching out, looking for people, you know. And she came, and we went to some, do you know that theatre or whatever it is? Century, this thing. So,
oh, yeah.
So we're in the thing, and we were waiting for Christian, and she goes, and I'd got some chips when I came out of the thing. And she goes, oh my God, you got French fries. She's just going to have one. And I went, yeah. So I'm in the back lane. Eating chips, and Owen O'Neill, who's another comic,
yeah,
is in a taxi driving past. he went, I've just seen Tiff having a bag of chips with Cindy Crawford. and she was greeting the chips. And then afterwards, we went up to the theatre, and Dennis Hopper was there. And this is not McClunk, but no, this is true. It was big friend and Kevin Spacey. And I said, this is before he was. You know, and he never fucking tried it on with me.
No,
I never got champagne and strawberries on the stage. So he said, So Kevin Spacey says to me, he goes, he's reading the program. He goes, you're all stand-up comics, yeah? And I went, yeah. And he goes, you used to be a stand-up, didn't you? And he went, no, I used to do impersonations of. He was from Mumbai as well. I used to do impersonations of singers, you know. He says, I never did stand-up. And he goes, okay. And he goes, you? He says, here, you've been in Dubai. You've been in Abu Dhabi. And you've done gigs in India. He goes, how do you do that? I went, well, I speak Punjabi and I speak Urdu. And I speak four dialects of Arabic. And I hope I can say this. And he went, really? And I went, of course I don't, you daft cunt. I swear to God, and Dennis Hopper went, he called you a cunt! He called you a cunt! That's not a word of a lie. It was hilarious. And Spacey's face, that's why he probably started touching people. allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly a lot, though, eh? A lot of allegedly.
A lot of allegedly.
I loved what you did with the way when you introduced yourself. When you got introduced to Christian Slater, who played the Jack Nicholson part in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, we all had a table reading, and we were all comics, and he was a big star, wasn't he? You know, and he came in and he went and we had a break, and we had a cup of coffee, and a cup of tea, and we're all in the little Mackenzie Crew and all up there.
Yeah.
And he goes, hi guys, yeah, and so like, so I goes, yeah, Christian, I just want to say, I really loved Minority Report, and he went. I wasn't in it. I went, I know, I just wanted to see a real report. They went, you fucking cunt! I'm never going to get a job in Hollywood, I'll tell you that. I'm doomed to do independent films like Fisherman's Friends and stuff like that, you know?
But I bet they love it, though, don't they? Because you must be the only person who moves in that circles who isn't licking all these people's asses, apart from Kevin Spacey, allegedly.
Do you know the Covent Gardens Hotel, right?
Yeah.
We went there, and they've got an honesty bomb. We're there one night late, right? And we're all drinking. And you sign for the thing. And I went behind the thing, and I was getting all the drinks. And I goes to Christian, what tune? He goes, don't put it on my room. Put it on Dennis Hopper's room. So I was, what's that together? So I'm just putting on his, and then afterwards Dennis Hopper goes to him. I went to bed at 9 o'clock and I spent £500. Dennis, you must be getting up in the middle of the night. But it is, because the thing is, you know, it's just a laugh, isn't it, you know?
So I don't think fame's changed you, though, Davey, is it? I mean, it's...
But you know what it is? Because I've had to learn. Because the thing is, Ken Loach, when I work with Ken Loach, Ken films differently. He has a very small crew. He uses lenses, so the camera's never in your face. So when I go on... So the next film I had to do, I had to learn... Like, everybody thinks you're... You just know when you go on a film set.
Yeah.
So, like, it was with Stevie Graham. I mean, he's a brilliant... You know, Stevie Graham. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a fantastic actor. And it was Jason Fleming. And I'm in this thing. And I'm just... in all the cameras and the lights and massive big crew. And so... it's like everything. It's a working class thing, I think. I don't know if you think... But what I think it is that you either... just talking in shite to cover up your fucking vulnerability or you get pissed, right? And so I just think, if I'm just talking and making people laugh, yeah, then they can't go, hang on a minute, he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. And when they do realise that's too late, they've shot the thing in. I've got them. But now I'm learning all the time, you know, I'm getting more and more technique, camera, yeah, and getting more and more. And, you know, I've just done this film with Alison and you know, and I'm getting... In people are offering us parts. This is why I've got the beard now. I'm doing a film up in the Hebrides next month. It's about these two kids do a bungled drug deal and they go and hide in a Hebridean island in a little sort of bothy. And I'm this weird fisherman who gets them out,
yeah,
to Cockles, because I'm shipping Cockles to Spain.
Okay,
but I'm going to have a load of paperwork after the 31st. So basically, me just going, oh, for fuck's sake, yeah, another form! More cockles! What, I've got to do this in triplicate? Hang on a minute, I've got an Irish passport. I could just get them through. So it's about that. So I've got to grow this beard, and I've got, it's November the 5th we start. It's okay. Only 5 days I'm doing it, and I've got to do it. And it goes... he comes in with a... what was it? Thick West Scot West Coast of Scotland accent.
Okay.
So it's a bit like this, you know what I mean? Like that's. I find a cockle fisherman would play it a bit like this. Hey, if what you call him do that, buddy? What you call him? The guy from Sheffield. What do you call him? He was in Game of Thrones. What do you call him? Sean Beaman hasn't stopped him, bloody, yeah. Sean, you're playing an American scientist. Well, I think I'd play him with a Sheffield accent. You're playing a Russian sub-captain. Well, I'd play him with a Sheffield accent.
No, it's great. I mean, it's insane, really, isn't it? With all of the, and then film after film coming. Fisherman's Friends has done amazing well. You're doing another Fisherman's Friend.
Yeah, Fisherman's Friend 2, the sequel.
Oh. Boo!
But yeah, you know, and it took a load of money at the box office. Yeah. It's just feel good. It's a daft feel good, but it had a great cast in it. We were 5 weeks down in Cornwall at Port Isaac. We had a great laugh down there, you know. So it's really looking. I'm meeting loads of nice people, and it's just a bit of a laugh, you know what I mean? And I think it's like because I've just got a film career. I mean, everybody thinks, God, wouldn't it be great to do films? And suddenly you get in it going, bloody hell, I'm doing it, you know what I mean? And it's bonkers, and it's just got to keep enjoying it. And I mean, like when they say to you, oh, you've been nominated for Best European Actor, and you're going, what the fuck? And then this is crazy. And the guys, oh, they're all mental. And we went over to Berlin to the film festival. And it was Dominic Cumberbatch. He was in it.
Oh, Dominic Cumberbatch.
What you got? I can't remember. Do
you want Benedict Cumberbatch first, or do you want Dominic? Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Okay.
And the guy who's in Prometheus.
I mean, he's no Davy Jones, let's face it.
The guy who's in Prometheus who plays the robot.
Fassbender.
Fassbender. And my daughter said to me, she goes, she's 14, she goes, Dad, are you up against Michael Fassbender for best actor? I went, yeah, she goes, smash him, Dad, smash him. And what you call him one, Hugh Grant.
Okay.
And Hugh Grant for that one where he plays the husband of the singer, Dora, you know, the singing, she's a really bad singer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Florence, this... yes, there he is. There's Mark Kermode sitting there in the audience.
Good work, good work.
Or somebody that never gans out. And he, this is not, and I swear this is true. He came up to me and he went, and he goes, he goes, hey, you should have won this. Your film's outstanding. And I went, is it then? And he wasn't expecting that. And he went. I just see him going, he's got a Geordie accent, he'll take it off us. And I said, you knew you were going to win this award. And he went, I didn't. I guess, yes, you did, because you're the only one here with a carrier bag. Against the Fassbender. Yeah, Fassbender, did you bring a carrier bag? And he went, no, I didn't bring a carrier bag. Cumberbatch, did you have a carrier bag? I've got no... You got a phone call, didn't you? You've been nominated and bring a carrier bag. Because you didn't want to be walking around with an award, do you? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't. He's going on Hugh Grant going, I didn't.
It's
do you know what it is? You know what it is? It's because I come from a... The one thing is, I've got a load of mates, right? Who take the piss out of me fucking all the time. And so you have to, you can't be, like, you know what I mean? You've got to, and that's how I've been brought up.
But a lot of people do, isn't it? A lot of people don't behave. And weirdly, I think a lot of people who maybe had a long career and suddenly it happens and then they... It's very difficult not to turn into a bit of an arsehole when you become kind of super famous, I think. And I've seen.
Well, I'm only 63. I've got plenty of time. Yeah, one straight... of them old people's home, eh?
But straight away, most people go through at least a little period of being a bit of an arsehole, but you don't seem to have... That doesn't seem to have happened today.
Because you know what it is? It's because it doesn't... To me, it comes... I'm very lucky. I'm fortunate that I'm in this position. And, yeah, of course you get... annoyed at things, but then you just go, have a fucking word with yourself, man, you know? And I think if more people said, just have a fucking word with yourself, you know? And I think it's about in not take yourself fucking so seriously.
Yeah, and it's insecurity as well. I think you kind of hear these stories of people divas and...
Most people who blow the... It's like because they fear that it's going to go... Fucking, but I've still got the fucking donkeys if it all goes to. I just keep renewing my license. Hello, it's Mr. Jones here. Oh, yes, I'd like to renew the license for the donkeys again, please. Oh, is the career going a little bit slow, is it? Never you mind. But I think it's a case of keeping your foot. And, you know, my dad was always saying to me when I was a kid, stop showing off. Nobody likes a show off. And I think that sticks in you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Although you're a comedian, so that didn't work.
No. But I think that's why. It's like, you know that thing when you just feel as though sometimes you think, oh, my God, I shouldn't be here. You know that thing, you know? And it's a case of just enjoying it while... Because it could fucking end tomorrow. They just go, hang on a minute, he's fucking rubbish. And so just enjoy it, I think. Yeah. I mean, you know, we just have fun with it, you know?
I mean, it could be. Do you ever worry that you're in a comedy club and you really banged your head really badly and you're in fact just lying in a hospital bed?
And I think I'm in a coma. I think I'm in a coma. And all these noises are just people talking next door. Because every now and then I hear, boop, boop, boop.
Wake up, Davey. Wake up, Davey. Please wake up.
347 milligrams of pentanyl. boop, boop. What? Yeah,
and what I like though as well is a lot of people would have become a successful proper film star and left stand-up behind, but you're still doing your stand-up, you're touring your stand-up.
Why? Would you ever not want to stand on stage with a group of people, strangers, in a room like this and make people laugh?
Yeah.
It's the best thing. You know, you can watch comedy on the internet. You can watch it on live at the Apollo. These are the places where stand-up is where it should be.
Yeah.
And where it should be is in a live comedy club. Where it's happening in front of you. It's happening in front of you, you know? And all the... See, on you know, all the shit bits are cut out on telly. Here you get the shit bits as well. And the shit bits make the good bits even funnier.
That's very much my philosophy. That's very much that's this podcast philosophy.
All you want to do is... The shit bits don't get more than the funny bits. But the thing is, you know, it is, and I do like doing stand-up. You know, I'm doing my one-man show here on the 22nd of October.
Yeah, must all come.
So a few lot here. If you want to come, there's still a few tickets left. 326. But it's the 22nd on Tuesday here, so that's me doing me show here. But you know, but you know, I just like it's just great to walk out on stage and just have fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that because I think all through anybody's life, humour's what makes life bearable sometimes, doesn't it?
You know? Yeah, and I think but once you're used, I mean, you're a writer as well. You've written, you co-wrote the. The Shawshank Redemption play with Owen, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you've been writing sitcoms, and you're writing your own material. I think the acting's kind of fun, I think, isn't it? But it's sort of quite a boring, long process, right? When you're actually doing it, the whole stuff around it.
If you've got the lead role, you're doing it all the time. But if you're sitting around, but that's why you can have. That's why me and Alison Steadman, when we're sitting around waiting for shots, we had this. This phone went off. It went like one of those old-fashioned ringtone, so I just went, "Hello, Whitehall 247. And Alison went, "Hello, it's Felicity here." And I went, "Where have you been, Felicity?" "I'm sorry, Gerald, but I have to tell you I'm leaving you." And I went, "What?" She goes, "I'm pregnant." And I went, "What, Felicity?" She goes, "Yes, with triplets." And I says, "Who's the father?" And we're just improvising, and she went, "Brian." I went, "My father?" And we just did that, so that's what we do all the way through the whole thing. And I think that's what it is. It's about... So how can you... I can't take what I do seriously when I see all the fucking madness in it. You know what I mean? And I just call it out. I mean, Ken Loach has got a great sense of humour. Mark Rylance came up to Ken Loach in Cannes and he said to Ken, your film is magnificent. And he looked at me and he goes, your performance is what I always try to reach. And I know what he meant by that. He meant the truth in it. And he said to Ken, he goes, last month, Daniel Day-Lewis came over to my house and we watched all your movies back to back. Ken went, did you not want to kill yourself? I mean, that's what you see. You don't go, oh, well, thank you very much. What did you think? Can you imagine them two fuckers watching your work? Can you imagine Daniel Day-Lewis and them two going, oh, yes, like this, you know? And so you have to, like you can't fucking take yourself too serious. Or you are an arsehole if you take yourself too serious, you know?
Sure.
And that's how I get on with people who are just having fun with it, because it's something that came out the blue for me. I never thought that. I thought I'd be walking, your kids would be gone, put your donkey on here, it's £2. And I'd have all little hats and I'd have, like, the comics, names of the comics I've worked with. Be like, you know, the little flighty one, the little feisty one, that'd be Lee Evans. In the sort of like the stroppy one would be Jack D. And the one who thinks nobody likes him, Michael McIntyre. No, it's not true. He's a good lad, Mike.
He's a good lad. There's a couple more things from your facts which have been invaluable. What about the time you played an Irish pub in Bali? Do you know this?
Oh,
remember this one?
Oh. Would you like to come and do some gigs in Bali? Fucking yeah. I did go out with Johnny Candon, who was an Irish comic, and we're sitting watching his sunset on a beach. And I said to him, I really love you, Johnny, but I'd rather be here with my missus than you. And so he goes, it's in an Irish pub. So we go to this Irish pub, right? And this, honestly, and there's a band playing. So again, he goes, oh no, the band are going to stop. And then you're going to do the gigs.
Right.
And this is an Irish theme pub, right? And I goes, what? So he goes, and the people are going, yeah, and he goes, okay, okay, that's the end of the band. Gonna have some comedy now, gonna have some comedy. And here you go. And he just handed me the mic. And I looks over, and there's an Indonesian dwarf dressed as a leprechaun dancing on top of the pool table. And I went, I'm glad you got me Ryder, because I never go on unless I've got that. And all the people are dancing to this heavy metal stuff, and then they stop and they go, and I'm going, and they're looking at me going, what? And I'm going, hey, hi there, where you from? You know, and it's fucking insane. And this little guy going, and at one point I thought, and I stopped, I went, you can see him, can't you? The little leprechaun. And yeah, 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 and that happened. I did a gig on a nuclear submarine.
Right.
For the army, for the army navy, sort of like, you know, it's like CSE. They flew me to Guam, and it was me in a wardroom of all these officers in a nuclear submarine, and they were all dressed as women. They all had dresses on. That wasn't a tough gig at all. 45 minutes, I died on my arse. And one of these guys goes, hey, did you just do this for a holiday? I went, yeah, I phoned up Thomas Cook and said, have you got 2 weeks for me dying on my arse in Guam? And I flew out with this guy from the Navy, and we was chatting away, and we were having a right laugh. We landed in Tokyo. We had a night in Tokyo. We went out. We were drinking sake. Had a lovely thingy. Cracking hard. Got to the thing. Got on the submarine. Died on me arse. Travelled all back with a fucker not speaking to us. And I'm going, look, it's really hard to do a gig on a nuclear submarine. And I went, and I thought, I know what would be funny. I'll go, here, you know these pipes? What happens when you dive to leaky pipe depth and all the water starts? It was a bit like this fucking thing here. Everybody's going, because I thought this would get a laugh, and they all look at me like, what? Because you know when all like, when you get too much pressure and all the water comes pouring out the pipes? Silence. And I had to just keep on going, and they were just, and because they all knew each other, they were just, you know, and it was just, and I was getting, you know, the dry
man. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was going, I must have been on here now 10 minutes. I did get $3,000 for it, like,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's all right.
Long way to go to die in your arse for $10,000, $3,000. But yeah. So I've had some weird gigs.
So even like from your early life when you're a bricklayer to just being a stand-up comedian is a massive change. I mean, you've had this incredible life of variety even before you had the film star stuff.
Yeah, it was.
Could you have dreamt of that? Are there any walls we can go and look at that you made in Newcastle?
You know Jesmond Cricket Ground? Right at the top of the Jesmond Cricket Ground, where the fence goes along, there's a wall. It's like a circular wall.
Yeah.
I built that.
Anyone know it? Is it a good wall?
Don't laugh. It's hard to build a bloody curved wall like that.
Is it still there? I mean, it must have been there for quite a while.
Yeah. For 40 odd years, I was, you know, I was bloody, what, the last time I did bricklaying in anger was when I was 20. Eight or something, so it's been there a long time, so I built that, I sang on stage with Bo Diddley.
Okay.
Yeah, at the Mayfair, when the Mayfair, remember the Mayfair that was there? Yeah, I got up on stage with Bo Diddley. Then I shagged her afterwards.
Did he invite you up, or was it?
Okay. I was in the front, and he goes, come on, get up, because I was, and I got up, and he was going, he goes, I remember when I started in this business. He goes, Mr. Howlin' Wolf. And he went to me and I went, the flower pot man. The biggest spotty dog in the world. And I was going, yeah. We're just doing all these names, you know? Yeah, yeah. And Bo Diddley. And I'm going, that's Bo Diddley. You know? Yeah, that was, yeah, so I did that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was a bricklayer, and I was, it was all, you know. It's the same thing, it's just when I was a bricklayer, I used to they used to call me the manhole king.
And Kevin Spacey wasn't interested in
it? Yeah, baby, you want me now, don't you? Basically, we used to build these big housing estates, and I used to always get into trouble for taking the piss and talking to all the and stopping the other apprentice from working.
Yeah.
So they said, we've got to get rid of him. So they said, what we'll do is we'll send him out into the fields as the site moves up and he can do the manholes. So they'd get a big dump out truck of bricks and they'd drive me to this manhole in this field, and the site would move up, and they'd just dump all the bricks and all the mortar, and they'd just in this big hole, and I'd just build the sewer manholes for when the site caught up with us.
Yeah.
You know, but I used to just put the radio on and listen to fucking Radio One, you know. So I don't think there's any manholes on that estate, you know. The shite's just going into the deck. Curse you, manhole thing! But it doesn't make. But you wouldn't have invited me on your podcast if I'd been one of the best manhole builders.
You never know.
And tonight we have one of the finest manhole builders. Yeah. So I did that. And I had fun at building site, but I just, you know, I always thought I think what you got to do is, right, which is the biggest crime is pigeonholing people into like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You've got to do this. This is your lot. You work in a factory. You work that, and that is bullshit. Now, not everybody can do, but you've always got to have a go. You know, and that's what I've done. And you know, some like you know, loads. I used to be a professional gambler, man.
Yeah.
Mark, I used to knock around with these farmers, and they used to go to Sedgefield Racecourse, and they used to bet massive. And this is in the '80s, like massive amounts of money. You know, in the most I lost was £1,000 on a horse called Chatham. Peter Scudamore was riding it. It was clear by a mile, and it fell at the last fence. And that's what I saw. But in them days, you used to have to pay tax if you got a ticket. So if you didn't get a ticket, you didn't have to pay the tax. So if you won, you got the money back. And if you lost, you would have to pay tax. So and they would write your name down. So I had a long herringbone trench coat. So they used to call me the coat. So on Sedgefield Racecourse, I was called the coat, and I told this to Mark Lamar, and he said, "Are you sure that's what they were calling me?" And I tried to be a, you know, just those stupid things where you just think, "I know, I'll be a professional gambler, aren't you? Mississippi gambler on the on No Shields Ferry." Who is the tall, dark stranger there? Maverick is his name. He's a gambler. We're on the Mississippi, no, on the Tyne, on the ferry. He's got to play the fastest hand in poker because it's only 10 minutes across the... twist now!
But you know what's interesting? I think what's interesting, and what's interesting about that Adelaide, that group of comedians that went to Adelaide, right? And it's... I tried to write a TV show about that, because about all those guys going. But in the 1980s and 1990s, anyone could be a stand-up, and that group of guys who went to Adelaide that year, all from really diverse backgrounds. Yeah. Parrott had worked on the docks, hadn't he? And Smiley, and then there was, you know, me and Stu from university.
Smiley was a bicycle courier.
Yeah.
You know, and I think what it was that's the one thing about stand-up. It brings all these different people, you know. It brings university lads like yourself mixing with a humble, like, you know, secondary modern lad like me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a few, you know, if I'd have been back at the schools, I'd have been taking your dinner money off you.
But do you think it's like that still? Because I think that's a bit of a 25 years ago kind of thing, 20, 25 years ago. Anyone could rock up and have a crack at stand-up, and people who had done other jobs were coming to do stand-up. What? And now it feels like a profession that is much more middle class.
People have got the eye on the prize. Yeah, I started my club at the Comedy Cafe on the bottom of Westgate Road, the Tyne Theatre. 1989 was the first time I started, and all the students used to come, and it was something like £5 to get in, and we had Jack D and Lidley Evans, we were starting off, and Joe Brand and Coogan and all them, you know, they're all, you know, and it was, people were going, it was like, what, you're going to give me £100 in 1990 for just stand up talking shite? Yeah, I'd like, you know, but now when you look at comics, they've got this eye on the ball, you know, on where they're going to go, on like how far they're going to get, and back then it wasn't like that, it was just like, We're just messing about.
Yeah, but also people were coming at it from, you know, people were coming in their 30s and 40s and starting at that time.
Yeah.
And now
I started when I was 30.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to happen. You know, you've got a bit of life experience and you've got some stories and you've got kind of...
Well, I gave Ross Noble his first gigs when he was 14 at my club. And he was so young, he had to stay in the kitchen while he went on and did 5 minutes. And his dad used to drive him down there, you know. Yeah. And so there was all that, you know, when Harry Hill started down there and Alan Davis used to do, and used guys came and did the thing, you know. It was all that. In you know, the Mighty Bush Lads and all that. Yeah. And you know, so it's... it's all right, we'll edit that out. It's me false...
it's fallen off, last. The blood wasn't getting to it, Dave. That was the problem.
No, I know. But the thing is, I think that's more now. It's a case of having a go.
Yeah.
I think that's what you have to do. I always say to my daughter, just have a go, you know? And I know it sounds like, oh, God, that's so trying to just go, just have a go. Look, nobody can be here. But that's true because that's what you have to do, because otherwise, you know, if I hadn't sent that text, I wouldn't have been... doing films. If Daniel Blake had been set in Manchester, I wouldn't have been seen for it.
Yeah.
So it's those things of when you get your chance, it's not luck, it's you take your chance. And if you can take your chance, when it happens, I just happened to be in the right place, right time. He was looking for me. It was the right part. I got on great with Ken. I was just being myself.
Yeah.
And the one thing Ken said to me, which is nice, he said, because I'd never done any film acting, and he said, the one thing you've got to realise in this film is there's no music in this film. So there's no thing to let the audience, to tell them how to feel. So you and Haley have to be true, and you have to be real, and you have to be honest with your emotion. And if you're honest and truthful with the emotion that you're playing, it'll look right on the screen. And that's what I try to do all the time. And that's the only training I've done.
Yeah.
And he said to me, so somebody said when they were interviewing, why did you pick Dave? And he said, because comics are very good at communicating. And he said, I knew when I met Dave, I'd get an honesty from him. And that's what I wanted for the part. And so that's, I think, what you bring to everything. That's what I try to bring to everything, really, you know.
Good. Well, it's worked out, Davey. I'm very pleased for you. And I'm hoping you'll go from strength to strength. We're looking forward to everything you've got coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, massive round of applause. Dave Johns! Sir David Johns.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely.
Thank you.
With me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Dave Johns. Blimey! Thank you to Pest for providing this music. Thank you to everyone at The Stand Newcastle. It's truly one of the best stand-up clubs in the world. They also have really nice food, and I get some for free every time I play, and that's all I need. It's wonderful. Thank you to my producer, James Hingley, who drove me around as well. I am indebted to my series producer, Ben Walker. I am more than ever indebted to my executive producer, Jonathan Harden. We call him Jonathan Hardon on set. That's what we call him. But he likes it. It's just a bit of fun. And he is always erect and moving around and whacking us with his penis. In the days of Me Too, that should be a problem. But the thing is, we all like it and encourage it. So no problem there from Jonathan Harden. It's a fuzz. Go Faster Strike and Sky Potato Production. Why not head down to gofasterstrike.com/badges, become a monthly badger, and you get loads of benefits and loads of extras, including stand-up shows, behind-the-scenes interviews, loads of those, hours and hours of those. Advance warning of who the guests are going to be, which have been useful for the first London date, which has got a major guest, and it's sold out entirely on the badges. So bear that in mind, and lots more. Thanks for listening. I love you, especially my mum.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.